You're listening to the Toad Hop Network, radio worth watching.
Hello, Schmoville. That's right, it's another episode of the Schmoes Know Movie Show. It's myself, me, Christian Harloff, and...
Oh, thank you. I'm Mark Ellis. Good to be here in Schmoville once again every Thursday. We've been live for the last few Thursdays, and it feels really effing good, guys. Really mother effing good.
A lot of really cool stuff going on in Schmoville. If you guys didn't know, the website is really, really... This thing has... It's got legs, man.
It's got rocket fuel in it.
There's a lot of cool stuff going on. For those... I know that sometimes a lot of people go to our Facebook page or even on the YouTube videos here. They'll be like, hey, did you guys hear the story about this? And like 3 hours, 4 hours later, Mark Riley, now you can wave your hand back there, Mr. Editor-in-Chief.
Riley, why are you dressed like it's a snow day?
No, you can't talk. Remember? That was the deal tonight.
Just post stories. That's all you're supposed to do.
But posting stories, he does like a Jedi master.
Really?
Oh, man, this guy has been kicking ass. Like, they literally, this website has gone... We've become a player in the movie news game because of that dude right there. So if you have not checked out schmoesknow.com, we have a bunch of new writers on there, a lot of special articles. There's constant movie news, and you guys keep checking out that site every day. We're trying to update news for you guys as much as possible.
Yeah, it's very exciting, and thank you, Riley, for all that you do. It doesn't matter that you're dressed like you're stealing baked potatoes from a mall somewhere in Nebraska. The fact that you're posting stories constantly is what we love you for.
Absolutely. And tonight's a very special night. We'll talk about some movie news up top, but as you see in the title of this video, tonight's episode is going to be in honor of the great Philip Seymour Hoffman, which we lost a great actor way too soon, Mark.
Absolutely, yeah. It was just shocking news to wake up on Sunday, getting ready for what I thought was going to be a great Super Bowl. That didn't quite pan out. And then to see that news, it just kind of cast a gray cloud over the whole day, and then you find out more details about what went on in his last 24 hours, and it's just so sad, because you always think of like addicts as just people who just can't get their shit together at all, and they're just kind of scumbags, and it's not. It's a disease, and unfortunately, one of the greatest actors that ever lived had it, and he's no longer with us. So
it's really terrible, and that was the thing, though. And again, I know there's been a lot of questions from you guys, like, hey, aren't you guys going to do anything about Philip Seymour Hoffman? And we were planning on doing this very thing right here, where we wanted to actually talk about his movies with you guys live. We thought that would be a lot more fun, because everybody can be involved in the conversation, as well as, I think we mentioned it at the end of our Lego movie review as well. So we will. We're all going to talk about his movies and what they kind of meant to us.
Yeah, it'll be a fun conversation. We got news coming, then we're going to talk about Philip Seymour Hoffman. Then we actually get to talk about a movie coming in theaters that we actually like this weekend, which is maybe the first time this year that's happened. So,
oh, yeah.
The Lego movie, yeah. No, I'm talking about Monuments Men. That boring piece of sixth grade book report trash.
Now, all right. Now, speaking of the news and movie news, there's a question came in here right now about from Kenneth Steichen, who says, Paul Bettany was just cast as Vision in the Avengers 2. What do you think of this? I think you should read Copster's article that just got posted on schmoesknow.com. Literally just posted it. And
did you make the jerk off motion there?
Sure.
Bizarre. We want them to read your article, not run away.
Yeah, girlfriend. I don't think you had to do that yourself anymore.
So, yeah, go check that out, too. Our thoughts on Paul Bettany as the voice of Jarvis is in there. But it's news time. Without any further ado, the news jerk, the pit boss himself, he didn't get nominated for Nebraska, but he's here for the news. Will Forte, Ken Napsa.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Someone tell me when the music's playing. Okay. I'm Ken Napsok, and these are your Schmoes Know headlines, brought to you by SchmoesKnow.com. A tasty casting rumor to start off your night. Evangeline Lilly, who spent the winter months making grown men fall in love with a war elf in The Hobbit, the Cumberbatching of Smaug, is reportedly up for the female lead in Edgar Wright's forthcoming Ant-Man, which already has Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas on board as different versions of the title character. No word on what exactly the female lead part would be, though a lot of speculation is it would be the character known as Wasp, because apparently this is a movie about all of God's most annoying insects. She could also be the daughter of the original Ant-Man, Hank Pym, though Pym had no daughter in the comic book. We reached out to a comic book expert for a little clarification, but he told us he couldn't talk about it at this Starbucks until his shift ended. Ant-Man is set for a release on July 17th, 2015. According to Deadline, the long, percolating Uncharted movie finally has a director, and it is horrible bosses and identity theft signal caller Seth Gordon, who, it is worth mentioning, did direct the highly regarded 2007 documentary King of Kong. The film will be based on the highly successful and enthralling video game franchise Uncharted, centered around adventurer Nathan Drake and a collection of female characters so hot you don't even need to set your controller to vibrate. No actors have emerged as top contenders for the lead role, so you still have time to submit your homemade fan film. Be sure to email them to justpleasestayinvirginia@gmail.com.
Hey, what's wrong with Virginia?
The world is still recovering from the news of Jesse Eisenberg being selected to play Lex Luthor in the upcoming Batman vs. Superman film, a.k.a. the clusterfuck, to help ease the recovery process, though. The Hollywood Reporter just released an interesting article looking at some of the reasons behind it. Most important was the, quote, next-gen mandate from Warner Brothers, which sounds like an ageism ploy designed to keep Bryan Cranston out of the role. But on closer inspection, the WB is trying to keep in line with recent versions of the Superman tale that have Luthor and Superman in the same advertising demographic. With the returning Henry Cavill coming in at 30 years of age, the casting of the Oscar-nominated Eisenberg makes a little more sense. Also, the piece said that the fan-favorite pick Cranston was never approached for the role, nor was an in-house discussed option of Tom Hanks. Instead, Girls actor Adam Driver was approached but couldn't take it due to scheduling conflict, and Joaquin Phoenix was offered the role but passed because he was too busy trying to give his smartphone a handjob. The film will be released in May 2016 despite anything you type in a chat room forum. In a webcast for Disney investors, Disney head honcho Bob Iger said that plot points in the upcoming Captain America the Winter Soldier will, quote, set critical events in motion that will lead directly into the Avengers Age of Ultron. Mm. Also, set critical events in motion is the tagline of my favorite fiber pills. This exciting news from fans of Marvel was immediately followed by the news that plot points in the next Cap film will also spill over into the ABC television program The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is like a woman telling you that you're about to have sex, but you have to leave the room first.
Kenny! Break.
Iger also said this week that the new intellectual property based on the Star Wars franchise has a, quote, estimated useful life of approximately 40 years, which means if you have a son born today, 40 years from now, you'll get to yell at him, take your damn Star Wars Episode 20 posters down and get a job, I'm kicking you out of the den. And finally, sadly, in a heart-wrenching story full of tragic but important life lessons, Oscar-winning actor Philip Seymour Hoffman passed away on Sunday, February 2nd, of what is still believed to be a heroin overdose. Hoffman was one of the industry's most respected and powerfully talented actors, first making waves in 1992's Scent of a Woman, and had mesmerized audiences ever since, including most recently bringing much-needed intensity and depth to the Hunger Games franchise. Hoffman had battled an addiction his entire life and was at one point 23 years clean and a mentor to many who struggle with the same issues. So, while social media warmongers and trolls will post with misguided anger about concepts like selfishness and waste, we at Schmoes Know would like to take the chance to mourn the loss of a life, celebrate a brilliant career, and hope that if anything positive can be drawn from this, may it be a much-needed spotlight on the seriousness and struggle of addictions of any form. Hoffman was 46. I'm Ken Apsok, and those are your Schmoes Know headlines brought to you by SchmoesKnow.com.
All right, Kenny.
Wow. Back to form.
Yeah, very powerful read there. And you know what's, you know how you can tell Kenny's just an A-list comic? Is because towards the end of that, he was delivering his last joke and an ambulance was coming by. And you know, when you're at a club, you can't control if there's like a cop driving by or something, a waitress drops a drink, and you did not miss a beat. Wow. You continued to hit, you deliver the joke, and you got an applause
break. Thank you, sir. It's like kind of when the waitresses are ringing up the checks. You still have to go.
That's right. The check drop, it haunts us all, but we got to persevere.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the art that he brought out there. Let's start with this Eisenberg thing. Let's get it right on the table.
Well, okay, so you heard about this Eisenberg thing.
Right away, then
you immediately here's Christian Harloff's day a few days ago is he wakes up, he hears about the Eisenberg news, and he literally stops doing whatever he's doing and he plugs into Google Plus and he talks to the fans and
I made a straight out video.
You made a video?
Yeah, I just put a video up. I made my thoughts and I put up the video, and thanks for watching the channel, by the way.
It was a great video, man.
No, thanks, I appreciate it.
It was so well done.
But yes, and I got my thoughts out there and we discussed it. I was heated up about it, and you know, and I think more or less I'd like this, before we get into Eisenberg too, this whole lesson, there was something that he said in that report about Adam Driver.
Yeah.
How he's, you know why? And Riley, I'm telling you this right now. There was rumors that Adam Driver was rumored for Star Wars, he got cast. I'm pretty sure he got cast.
Oh, so you think that he can't take Lex Luthor because he's already going to be in Star Wars?
Yeah, I spoke to someone who talked to someone. They said that it looks like Adam Driver is going to get cast in Star Wars. We can't put that yet on the site because I don't know how true it is, but I think that's why he couldn't do it.
Yeah, well, you know, Lena Dunham makes sense as Carrie Fisher's daughter. That's just a little joke. So I think getting back to the Eisenberg thing for a minute. When I first heard the news, Chris and I had some shoot that we were going to, and we were talking about it on set, because that's what bigwigs do. We talk on set. And I thought it was actually a good decision, because if you're looking at a younger Lex Luthor, then you can't cast Gene Hackman. You can't cast Bryan Cranston even. You got to cast somebody that, like Kenny said, is of Henry Cavill's kind of age range. And I think that Eisenberg has that genius thing that he can do, and he's got like a wit, a sense of humor to him, a quickness to him, a sharpness to him, and I think that he can knock Lex Luthor out of the park. And I only was further validated in my opinion because some fan put a poster of him, like when he looked like with his head shaved.
Yeah.
That looked cool.
Well, I mean, Riley, why don't you go ahead and post on our Facebook page, post the Leanne one that she did. Mark, if you go to our Facebook page right now, facebook.com/schmozno, Mark Riley's going to post the picture that Leanne, the Photoshop queen of Schmoville, actually did today. And look, it's a convincing photo. It is. And even the one that we posted the other day, he can look like him.
That didn't change your opinion at all, actually, like putting the visual together?
I said it in the video, dude. The guy's a good actor. He's a great actor. He really is. But my problem is he's one of these one-trick ponies. He does the same thing, quick wit. You know, they're going to change the character of Lex Luthor. And will I like this version of Lex Luthor? Maybe. And I might very well say, look, he was great in the role, and I changed my opinion. But what I hate, what I can't stand, are when people comment, well, you know, don't just because Heath Ledger as a Joker and Michael Keaton, they're so different. I can see when they said of certain things, like, you know, Ben Affleck is more you can say that to in that main role, but for that particular reason. You had Heath Ledger, who the character of the Joker never changed. He had his own spin on the Joker, but the essentials of what the Joker was stayed intact.
Well, I think also when Heath Ledger came to the role of the Joker, and when Michael Keaton came to the role of Batman, those two actors had proved that they had different gears that they could shift to in their career already.
Yeah.
Whereas Eisenberg, I don't want to call him a one-trick pony, but he hasn't shown as much range as something like those guys have.
Agreed, but not even that though. As far as and this is where I'm saying I'm not blaming him. Because it
just
looks
the way
like
the character moves?
They're going to switch the character around. Because again, with Heath Ledger, he stayed into what the dynamics of the Joker, and even like, you know, with Batman stayed the same. Like and you had someone like Nolan, by the way, Christopher Nolan, who works with character and story first. That's really where he strives. Zack Snyder goes for visual stuff first. That's his first point. He goes visual, and he likes to go off the wall, kooky casting, and some of his casting sometimes doesn't work. Matthew Good, Malin Ackerman, The Watchmen. So that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, it sounds like you're worried.
I'm worried, but again, the kid's a quality actor, and I hope that it's good. But this movie in general is such a fucking mess.
It's getting heavy.
Oh.
It's getting real, real heavy. And you know, again, Superman's never been my guy. I know he's your guy. I'm getting excited to see what happens with this movie. But at this point, this thing's almost like a soap opera, man. You know, it's taken a lot of weird turns and a lot of casting and a lot of news, and there's just a lot of characters. And I hope it turns out for the best. I really do.
Yeah.
And I think that Jesse Eisenberg is not going to be the problem with the movie.
I don't think he's going to be the problem with the movie. That's absolutely not. That wasn't my point. My point was just the fact that it lends into the decisions that are being made that are going to make this movie a mess. But
you want to go ahead and schmo the movie?
You might as well. Moving on. Let's talk about this the Ant-Man thing.
Yeah, Hank Pym.
So no, they're talking about now Evangeline Lilly being cast.
Yeah,
in the role. At one point, you had Rashida Jones was very close to signing to be in this role, as well as, and Jessica Chastain was rumored at one point.
Mm.
So now, Lily is the next. How do we feel about that?
Yeah, I have no problem with Evangeline Lilly. I mean, she was great on Lost, but then there were some other people that are great on Lost that haven't transferred to the big screen as well.
Yeah.
And then Evangeline Lilly, she was fine in Real Steel, and I thought she was awesome in The Hobbit, man.
Yeah.
I thought she was kick-ass in The Hobbit, and I think I would love to see her in more comic book kind of fare like this. I think she'd be great.
Me too, but I want her to finally not have a love triangle.
Well, I mean, you know, that might be wishful thinking. When you're talking about a comic book universe and you have all these good-looking buff dudes with huge pecs walking around, there's going to be a love triangle, Christian. You're going to have to accept that.
I think Riley just dropped dead. What happened?
I don't know. He was under the weather. He didn't even make it. Riley didn't even make it to his own Super Bowl party.
Yeah.
It was hosted by Roger Craig Smith.
You know, before we jump over here, there's a question that comes in from George Velez. You guys posted your review of the Transformers and Captain America Super Bowl trailers. What were your opinions on the Amazing Spider-Man 2 trailer? Either the Super Bowl spot or the extended 3-minute trailer?
We talked about this
on Heidi and Frank this morning.
Yeah. Our opinions were that when we were watching the Super Bowl, we were like, you know what? That trailer was fine. I don't feel like shooting the review. Right. Because it didn't move either one of us enough to really want to run out and shoot another review. I think that it looks fine. It looks like how I thought Spider-Man 2 had already looked to that point. It was nice to see Electro back in a Spider-Man trailer. That was really neat.
Far away from what we were just talking about with the fear of Justice League is that there's too many characters crammed into one movie again, just like they had the problem in part 3 with the Raimi version was Rhino, Chris Cooper as Harry Norman Osborn, then Harry Osborn, then Electro, and then the love storyline. It's like the movie's gonna be about 2:25. How are they gonna fit all that stuff in there?
But from a sales perspective, I have a college degree. I think that the reason why you put that trailer on the Super Bowl is because it does look like Spider-Man versus Electro. It looks like back to a kind of one-on-one, and then some other ancillary characters are going to be around, but it looks like Spider-Man versus Electro. My fear is that that's not what the actual movie is going to be.
Right.
My fear is that that 30-second spot makes it look like it's good guy versus bad guy,
right,
and that gets butts in seats, because I think people actually don't like being overwhelmed by all these different characters that they haven't heard of. Like, the average fan on the street knows all of these random characters that are going to be appearing in the new Man of Steel movie. Most people don't know who Rhino is. Most people don't know all the different, how to sort out all the goblins. They don't know who the hell Electro is.
Right.
They know Spider-Man. Well, so I don't think they want to be inundated with all these other characters.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they pull it. It's going to make a lot of money, and I think a lot of people are excited for it. I just
don't feel that much excitement.
I'm not that excited for it. I'm more excited for something like Planet of the Apes or even Guardians of the Galaxy more than I am.
Yeah, we had that conversation last week when JTI debuted Schmo's Choice, and like Spider-Man, I felt bad. He just got left on the bench. Nobody brought him into the game.
No, it's true. It's true. Because JTI hates Spider-Man. By the way, I know there's questions coming out of who's the a-hole texting in the back. He's not texting. He's tweeting out. That's Josh McCuga.
That's the wild man.
Yeah, it's the wild man. You know him from TV Tuesday.
Yeah,
doing a really strange dance. That's a really, really weird dance.
So we got Coster jerking himself off. Then we have Macuga doing God knows what. Riley's stealing Chick-fil-A samples.
Yeah, that Macuga, that dance just got you bumped back to Schmo Plus. So we are now going to move on real quick before we get into Philip Seymour Hoffman here. There's another, we didn't talk about Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman had an interview today. Did you hear this?
No. Was it set to acoustic music? Oh, no.
No, it was not. Gary Oldman.
Yeah, I did hear about
you
this.
You saw it. It was very, very when he was talking exciting. About RoboCop. And then they asked him. They said, listen, you've been a RoboCop. You're a Batman. You were in Dracula. You're Harry Potter. You're in all these movies. And, you're rumored to be in Star Wars back in the day. How about now? He's like, there have been phone calls.
Yeah,
and he's just
awesome.
Like, they're interested. And he's like, well, can you say anything else? And he's like, they're interested. And I'm just like, oh, Gary Oldman. And the best part about it is that I traded for him in our Episode 7 Fantasy Draft from Ken Napsok.
Yeah, now how'd this all go down? Because, a few adult beverages were had that night, so I can't remember all of the money ball that went on behind the scenes. You did not... Ken Napsok had Gary Oldman, right?
Yeah, no, because he knows exactly what he did wrong, and he knows that I used my Palpatine.
Yeah, now, Ken, if I can get a piece of your mind, we're all hanging out, having a good time.
Real quick, for fans that don't know, can you just give them a...
No, because fuck them. No, here's what the Star Wars Episode 7 draft is we all did a fantasy draft of actors and actresses and crew members we think are going to be involved in Episode 7.
Gina
the first
Carano!
Person to get... You also have Luis Guzman on your team, Macuga, so your roster's looking sharp. The first person to get three cast members that are officially announced as being in Episode 7 gets dinner, treated by the rest of the Schmoes crew. Hopefully we go somewhere that does not serve sushi. And now it's starting to heat up with all these rumors. And Ken, it looked like you knocked one out of the park when you drafted Gary Oldman. And then Christian somehow suckered you into... Now, who did you get in return for Gary Oldman?
You know, I do want to take credit for drafting Oldman because he was on my list.
You're a good GM,
I thought it was a great pick. I have to admit, I am overly obsessed with Game of Thrones right now.
Oh, he dangled a Game of Thrones at you.
I had Charles Dance, Stephen Delane, Liam Cunningham, who's mm-hmm. Sir Davos. Delane is Stannis. Charles Dance of Tywin. I think I only had two of them, and I wanted all three. It was
to
like
complete
a collection.
Your Game of Thrones.
It was a collection.
These are like McDonald's collector's cups.
Like a
these
pop
are...
vinyl collection. And
I think I traded you two people. I don't know.
You might have. There might have been a throwaway, like Mike Gallego, a player to be named.
They gave you JTI to clean your kitchen or something.
Yeah, Tony Phillips came over. Yeah.
He threw in some little person.
Yeah, and that's what he did. He dangled it. Worked some stuff. I think I said no to some things, and then it was towards the end, and he got me.
He got you, and you gave up Oldman, and Christian, you have Gary Oldman.
No one from Game of Thrones is going to be.
But Christian, but this was back. This was a few months. This was like 6 months.
I also have Judi Dench on my team, by the way, too.
And the quote you said when you drafted her.
The quote when I drafted Judi Dench, by the way, mm-hmm. people were saying. Judi Dench, she's not going to be in a Star Wars movie, and I said she could play an old Mon Mothma. Yeah. Now, the rumor is that she's going to play an old Mon Mothma.
Now, why did you want Oldman so bad 6 months ago, though?
Me? Because...
Yeah, did you just because I hear Gary Oldman?
No, the reason why I wanted Gary Oldman was because I thought... Because they had the shot where he was supposed to be the voice of General Grievous originally, mm-hmm. and they booked him, and then there was this whole thing because it was the union non union thing because of the Lucas wasn't part of a studio. This whole thing they lost him.
Damn unions.
So I just said, and because of that reason, that he's been in everything like Batman and these movies, these big franchises, and because he's just a guy that lends credibility to a franchise.
Exactly. Yeah, and he's great, and I love how he's playing his cards so close to his vest as Gary Oldman. He's like his character in Tinker. Taylor Soldier Spy, where he's just not giving away shit,
right.
and he knows that there are dinners that are resting on his decision all over the world, including exactly. right here in Schmoville, so it's very exciting to follow this stuff. I just hope that Christian doesn't win.
Well, it's looking like I am. I've got Anthony Daniels, by the way, is pretty much confirmed as well, too, so I just need one more point.
C-3PO is confirmed, guy.
Which is Anthony Daniels.
Yeah, they might want to
get a younger. He tweeted it out today. There's some cryptic thing that he's basically in it.
Maybe they'll get Charles Dance to play C-3PO.
All right, moving on here now to what we're talking about for today. I guess bringing it into a somber mode here, but we also want to talk about...
The somber mode, but you can have fun celebrating somebody's life and career, especially when it's somebody who's not only talented, but is diverse. You talk about Jesse Eisenberg not showing us a whole lot of gears yet in his career.
Right.
Philip Seymour Hoffman could do pretty much anything. Even though he was never in the best of shape, he was great as Art Howe, the manager in Moneyball.
He was. He was really good in Moneyball. And we were going to mention that. Our top five Philip Seymour Hoffman movies, again, honoring them all this week, will be on movies.com. We almost put in Moneyball, but Ellis is right. You know, he definitely shows up, and he's really great in that movie.
But when you think of Moneyball, you think Brad Pitt, and you think baseball, and you think Jonah Hill getting nominated for his first Oscar. Usually, when we do our top five movies.com list, sometimes Chris and I are like, oh, this guy, and we really agree. Sometimes we literally have to go outside and have a jousting match with horses and javelins, and it's a blood fight. With this one, we didn't argue as much as I thought we might. Because Capote, obviously, as you pointed out, should be number one because he won the Oscar for it. And then the only one that I really wanted on there, and I think that you agreed with me, was even though it's a smaller role, is him in Almost Famous. That's when he really first came into my consciousness as, this guy's great. Who is this guy? Is he in other movies? Is he going to continue to act because he's fantastic? The way that he played that DJ, who was just... He had the bitterness, and he also was still excited about rock music, but he hated rock stars, and he was jaded, but he still had good advice to offer the kid. Everything that he did in that film was just perfect.
Yeah, he was. I mean, and that was the thing with everything that he did. It didn't matter if he was in a movie like as great as Capote or in something like, I know some people love it, but what about Polly? What's that?
Boogie.
Well, Boogie is a great movie, but I'm saying if from one spectrum to the next, like something great and something like, ugh, he was always there. Mm-hmm. You never ever said, Philip Seymour Hoffman phoned it in today. Never.
Yeah.
And even that's when you say a guy like that who was clearly having issues towards the end of his career, still 100% in it. Like you assume that during the Hunger Games filming, the catching fire. There were some problems going on. You couldn't tell.
I don't know.
I mean, you could tell?
No. I mean, I don't know that you can speculate as to when he actually kind of fell off the wagon. Oh, right. If that was during shooting or all that stuff. But right. I'll tell you this. When we mentioned this on the radio this morning, is that him in the Hunger Games, I liked the Hunger Games Catching Fire. I thought it was a really cool movie. I especially liked the Hunger Games portion of it. What got me through the first half of that, when I felt like I was like a new student in French 3, when I didn't really understand what was going on, was Philip Seymour Hoffman and Donald Sutherland. Every time they were on screen, it was so kinetic.
Electric, yeah.
And the conniving. And that... And then when they weren't on the screen, I was like, oh, I kind of want to see more political meddling.
And I'm glad we brought that up, too, because there was someone in Schmoville that just said, I didn't hear about this. And Riley, if you maybe can look this up, because I haven't heard about this either. Your hair, by the way, was doing something. You have like the emperor hair right now. It's great.
Well, let's take a look at it.
It's amazing. Look at that hairdo. It's like you're caught in a tunnel.
Wow, yeah.
So
he's got like a, he's got like an early 90s Dolmet Mulroney.
Look at that thing.
Mulroney.
I think he's got a life of its own.
Okay, what do you want?
Wow. We want to find out. Oh, my God. Dude, that is, you look like you should remember The Cure.
You look like Casey Seismasco and Young Guns.
My God. Anyway.
Is this a podcast about my hair?
It's pretty fantastic. Right, okay, listen. So there is a rumor that someone said that they're going to superimpose Philip Seymour Hoffman in the next, in Mockingjay 1 and 2.
Get out of here. Fuck that.
Well, how do you know? Did you even look? Is your hair speaking? All right, so maybe that's possible. Maybe that's the rumor.
All of his scenes have
been filmed. Have a microphone, so just...
All of Philip Seymour Hoffman's scenes have been filmed for the next movie.
Yeah, for Mockingjay Part 1.
Yeah, so then you...
Everything.
Everything.
Oh, they filmed... Okay, so he filmed everything. He's wrapped up...
They're going to be doing editing tricks.
Editing tricks.
There's one scene that he didn't film.
Okay.
And the filmmakers are already on record saying that they're going to just... creatively edited.
Oh, so they're okay. I mean, all right.
There's no superimposing.
All right. So, I mean...
I don't have to look it up.
Okay. So, there you go.
Is that Pantene? Is that what you're using?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So there you go. So there's the answer to that question.
Well, that's good news, because he really is an important part. And I don't read, but I think that his character factors critically into the last two Hunger Games films.
Yeah.
And so to have him continue that, I think that'll be a nice way to honor his legacy.
Okay, let's get the Wild Man in here, because Wild Man brought up a movie that I definitely want to talk about for sure. We're going to bring it. It's fine. That's fine.
I'll do
the
music for you. They won't even know the difference.
So now we're bringing Josh McCuga. Now, those of you guys who don't know Josh McCuga, that's the Wild Man. On Tuesdays, if you go to our channel on Schmoes Know, youtube.com/SchmoesKnow, TV Tuesday is now run by the Wild Man, and he does a recap every Tuesday, so make sure you check that out.
It's been a lot of fun. We got a lot of great comments, a lot of hits. It's been a blast.
It's been cool, man. Yeah. And
I like reading your responses to the comments. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's,
it is.
Because he gets a little defensive sometimes if somebody says
passionate. I'd say passionate.
But because I know McCuga, and I can tell when, that fire really was coming off the keyboard. Yeah. But no, you're very good to your fans, and that's crucial here in Schmoville.
Like, I appreciate all their comments. I really do, because like movies, people are very passionate about TV, just like myself.
Yeah. And, well, it's a great segment, guys. So if you're not checking it out on Tuesdays, you really should, because he's it's just the way that we've been labeling him is, if you like, I think the way this one you talked about black sales.
Black sales and community.
Yeah, black sales and community. If you look on the channel and you check that out, you can check out his segment. But let's talk about your favorite Philip Seymour Hoffman movies.
Right.
What was the one you just mentioned before?
Well, you know,
because mine too.
Boogie Nights.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
Was when I for me, like, the first time I saw him. I mean, he Son of a Woman, when he played the frat, like the mm-hmm. the early the high school
the,
frat
the
guy.
Little weasel that, the wiggle, that,
yeah,
yeah
yeah the smart
was,
dude was a rat
bitch.
But the you know, Boogie Nights kind of introduced him to me, and I think the scene for me that really sold it was when he first sees Dirk Diggler's dong, right? And he's holding that boomstick, and he can barely hold it, and he's not even saying words, but you can just tell.
In
you didn't
eyes,
know
yeah.
that he was gay up until then. You, like, sort of had inklings of it, but he can't even hold the boom pole. That's such a great moment, acting without words.
Well, you
that
know,
was...
And the thing was, it was so great about him. Yeah, you have a moment like that in Boogie Nights to where you'd see it, and you see the insecurity and everything in his face, and you knew. But then you do a movie like The Master, where he's got that confidence and the ability, and like the born leader. The guy was a chameleon for a long time, just a character actor.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because when you're that good, I mean, the same thing with like Gary Oldman as well, too.
Oh,
guys that just have that much talent.
Yeah, The Master is one for me where, because I didn't love that movie that much, but watching those two performances, him and Joaquin Phoenix, the way that Philip Seymour Hoffman would rise to anger in that film when he was just this guy who's just totally in control of these puppets. He's just a great co-leader point guard, and he knows exactly where everybody's going to go. And then when something goes wrong, something that when his life goes off book a little bit and he's not prepared for it, that rise to anger when he shouts at people, it's just so intense.
And you could see sort of if that, even though he said it wasn't L. Ron Hubbard, it wasn't the thing, but it was.
Yeah, it was.
And you could see if that if L. Ron Hubbard or Philip Seymour Hoffman and L. Ron Hubbard are the same person in that sense, you could see why people followed the man. Why people followed L. Ron Hubbard, why they followed Philip Seymour Hoffman.
It's that energy. It's the energy that he brings out. Ken Knapsack, our producer, has sat down as well, too. Ken, now you had some particular movie you want to talk about with Hoffman? Or?
Two. You mentioned the almost famous scene, which is with Hoffman doing Lester Bangs, who's a very famous rock journalist.
Yeah.
Who I've studied and read his autobiographies, and they're depressing and don't read them. But Hoffman captured his essence so well, and I think Cameron Crowe writes and produces and directs and with his heart on his sleeve so much, sometimes to his chagrin, but Almost Famous was his love letter to rock and roll.
All those classic rock songs work the best in a classic rock
movie. Cameron Crowe, he toured with the Allman Brothers. He covered Zeppelin and as a teenage journalist for Rolling Stone, so he knew Bangs. All that stuff was real.
Oh, JT, by the way, the Allman Brothers are a band. You should look them up. He didn't know who the Allman Brothers were. Like,
really?
Give him shit for that on Twitter,
okay. This way you don't have
I'm going to destroy you.
This way you don't have a car.
Hoffman...
You can't be a rambling man if you don't have a car.
Hoffman is the soul of that movie in those brief little scenes.
Yeah.
And that's and it's been talked about a lot this week, that phone call between the William Miller, who's Cameron Crowe, talking to Lester Bangs, going, man, I'm always home. I'm uncool, man. And that stuff is great. But also him in Magnolia, which PTA wrote that part for him, the character's named Phil. I love PTA, especially the earlier stuff. Magnolia is one of my all-time favorite films. And Hoffman scenes with Jason Robards, who's dying, and he's his caretaker, and that monologue he gives, which could have been so cheesy. It's the one where Hoffman's on the phone going, "This is the part of the movie when you help me." Like that could have been done so wrong.
What is it about Hoffman? Like what you know, just as a if someone who's like watching from the background in that scene in particular, what is it like? You said you know someone else would be cheesy in that role. What did he bring so differently that made you love it?
You mentioned he's always present.
Yeah,
the key to acting is listening and being present. He's always present, and the intensity, but it's not a loud intensity. It's
an energy.
It's an energy.
Yeah.
And a presence and a full commitment to the role that just comes out through the eyes. Acting
boiling below the surface. It's like a teapot that's about to start whistling, but it never quite makes a noise.
In Magnolia, when he's calling the pink dot and ordering the porn.
Yeah.
All right. The other thing, though, too, is this is, let's move on. There were movies like Magnolia, and there's movies like Boogie Nights and The Master, but then there's other movies that he's done. And again, like there's ones that
I'm
you go.
Along came.
Wait, don't say it. Now, Richard Roberts, Schmovillian, says, Hoffman is the only reason I love Twister. It's the wonder of nature, baby.
What?
I love that.
Yeah, I'm gonna be the only reason you love Twister.
I mean, Carrie
that's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
Twister. I love Twister.
Twister is a great.
Okay. All right. It's
Twister,
a good movie.
Twister is a great movie.
It's a solid 3 out of 5 schmoes. It's good. It's good. There's a part.
There's
when
a cow dancing in a tornado.
Yeah. Okay. You're right. It's terrible.
That was the best part of the movie. I was gonna say the cow was better than.
Yeah. I mean, they survive a tornado by using a belt to tie themselves to a pipe.
Yeah. It's a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, it is.
It's a guilty pleasure.
But here's for me.
Twister came out around the time of Independence Day, where it was just one of those movies that it was fun to go see and have a theater experience and get people talking. Like when that movie came out the next week, everybody in every dentist office and every corporate job in America was like, hey, remember the scene with the cow?
Yeah.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman, and he just, again, he lends a little bit of credibility because he's just this kind of dude. He just loves classic rock and he loves cranking Deep Purple when he sees a tornado, man. We're all humans being. And it was really cool.
And he also in the movie Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, which McKenna brought up here too, when the first scene is him like, look at JTI, what a creep, going like this in the background.
Marissa
Tomei, he's just going to town in the beginning, but again, like that's just everything that guy did.
Here's the thing, and I think
JTI,
there's actors like Philip Seymour Hoffman, Paul Giamatti, Steve Buscemi, who, when you look at them, they are hideous. Like, they're not good-looking people, right? But and like Danny DeVito, same way. But they have like a sexual presence,
confidence, power,
and a confidence, yeah, and something that they could sell you anything.
Yeah, because that's
you heard it here. The same guy that said Twister is great said Danny DeVito has sexual presence.
Dude, in Twins, like, he is, yeah, like he's a sexual being. He's,
oh yeah,
like,
I fuck him in Twins. What are you talking about,
man? I'm just saying, like, Danny DeVito has he's a selling point to him. Yeah, I don't see it, but there's something.
It sounds like you, Happy Valentine's Day, man. Yeah. It sounds like you.
Well, you know, and no, again, like, Leanne brought up.
Harry guys stick together.
Leanne brought up that, you know, a movie that I think everybody in this room loves is The Big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you forget that he's in that. He plays like a little weasel, and those are the kind of roles he had where he was just kind of a background guy. But you could not forget that he was there.
Yeah.
That was the thing. That's how great he was. Like, little things like you said, Makuga, like, he would put that energy in there just like, little things he did because of that power and that confidence.
That's a great example, Big Lebowski, because that's an actor bringing all that stuff we're talking about to a role, but knowing his part in a movie and not letting everyone else play, just having those little, the first lady of the nation, yes. Like those little moments that are just brilliant.
Yeah, and because you know what, and you know what he does in that movie also, which is what I love. I love when an actor or an actress that is doing comedy, well, that movie's clearly a comedy, and it's the timing. They're not trying to be funny because the funny is in the dialogue and the conversation, and that's what he did. You never see him like overcooking it or doing it's just the conversation and the looks that he had. He knew that the character and the lines would deliver, and that's what he did so well. He didn't try to one up his actors. That's what makes a great actor a great actor. Well, it's like you said, Ken, the back and forth listening, and he was no pun intended, the master of that.
He's like, not hamming it up when it doesn't call for it. And the same thing even in like a Long Game Polly. And if you talk about like the back and forth between two actors and having to listen in order to act and to deliver your own lines, really accept what the other person's giving you. I went to go see The Savages. I think before were doing
we did it on Current TV.
We reviewed it on Current TV.
Because remember Amy Clare, who looks like Laura Linney.
Yeah.
It was Laura
that's
Linney.
Right.
The
Savages was a great movie.
It was,
how is Amy Clare? I miss sleeping with her.
You
what?
Don't
no. What? Did I? Wait,
I think, you know, the thing for me that's a little disappointing. One, that you could see Philip Seymour Hoffman in like later years, like in his 60s, playing some incredible roles.
Just like the guy with like a glass of brandy talking about back in the day when he used to be a pirate or whatatever.
Something.
Oh,
just know forever. You just knew when he would be like an Anthony Hopkins type guy. Like
Anthony Hopkins, Richard, what was the guy that played the original Dumbledore?
Richard Harris.
Yeah, guys like, I mean, that's a great point, is the fact that the guy was at 46 years old was in the upper echelon of actors. Like, there was no one. I mean, every time we had an actor or actress on, whether, you know, it'd be R.J. Mitty, Katie Sackhoff, whoever was on, you mentioned Philip Seymour Hoffman, like, oh, he's and they bow to him because he was the best.
Like, one of my thoughts to him is coming out of the first Hunger Games, we all were kind of disappointed and trying to struggle with it. And then when he and Jeffrey Wright were announced as part of the cast, I went, we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
We're gonna be okay, and he was
because,
so key.
Because
and
it's
he wasn't
the same
allowed demonstrative character,
right?
Like,
well, because we knew who he was gonna play, and we're like, it didn't matter who he could have literally played one like a bird, and we're like, thank God he's you know, like, because that's what he brought to it.
There was a moment I was telling Christian this story, and first of all, for out there in Schmoville, when James Gandolfini died, Christian and I were in a screening of The Way Back, and I leaned into Christian and go, James Gandolfini. And then it ruined the rest of the movie for us.
Why did you do that at the beginning?
I don't know. No, it was like at the end of the movie, but I got like 30 text messages, and I knew he was a big Sopranos fan.
Yeah,
so
you just had to do it. You couldn't keep it all in.
So I turn on the radio, and all I hear is, Moore Hoffman was 47. And then they cut, this is NPR.
Man.
And I was like, holy shit, wait. So I just ripped on my phone, breaking news, Philip Seymour. So I call Christian, and I was like, call me back, big news. So he calls me right back, and he's like, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but you heard Philip Seymour Hoffman died. He's like, you're the harbinger of death.
You really are.
Him and JTI always break like death news.
Someone else I want to talk about too. Another PTA film.
Bring it up.
I can't see who wrote the comment, but it reminded me is Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah.
Brought that. I was afraid of that dude. I mean, that shows his range.
He could do. That was the thing.
And then boom,
his range. The guy's range was off the charts. Like he could play someone that you'd fall in love with. Then he could play a creepy weirdo that you don't want to go near. Like that. Mm-hmm. there's very few people that can do that kind of stuff because you can. It's hard for actors to connect into that. Like, you know, there's one. Again, like Jesse Eisenberg, using him for example, the guy's great
he's
at connecting.
Crushed tonight,
but no, but I'm not crushing him. I'm not crushing him.
No,
I'm just
sexual
saying,
energy.
He's only, you know, he's 30 years old, but he doesn't have that. It's not like he doesn't switch. Even like someone like Leonardo DiCaprio, who's great, one of my favorite actors out there, very specific in what he does. Sure. I mean, The Wolf of Wall Street was a little different from what he normally does.
You've never seen Leonardo DiCaprio do a comedy.
Well, Wolf of Wall Street, well, he had comedy chops. But no, he's growing pains. But my point is with that is that he's just like. The chameleon. Philip Seymour Hoffman was Daniel Day-Lewis, chameleon. Yeah. Like, there are very few guys with that type of... Who else?
Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman is not a New York police commissioner.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's the same type of thing with Hoffman.
Yeah. My family was on a cruise. This is like when Along Came Polly came out to like On Demand or whatever.
I love that movie.
And
That movie sucks, but why do you like it?
Well, here's the thing.
You're not the only person that's brought that up this week, too, is that Along Came Polly, for some people, is just a fun, nice romantic comedy. Like, my mom likes to exercise watching romantic comedies and probably pretending that her son is the guy that's falling in love. It ain't going to happen, Mom. And I think that movie...
Mark, you have sexual energy.
A court. I don't have any sexual energy.
Well, here's the thing. So we were on this cruise, right? And on the cruise, you get, like, two movies, and it's on closed-circuit television. And you get those two movies... Over and over and over again.
So one of those movies
was Along. It was Along Came Polly and The Miracle.
Speed 2.
And Miracle. So whenever you turn on the TV, it was either Along Came Polly or Miracle. So I memorized Miracle, and Along Came Polly became this just like I didn't really like it at all. But there was these moments of Philip Seymour Hoffman brilliance where my brother and I talk about like if we went into the boardroom when Ben Stiller asks him to do the presentation and he does it, it's one of the greatest scenes in a comedy simply because he carries it.
Yeah.
He is that movie. Whenever somebody talks about that movie, or they even go into a street basketball court, guarantee you they say the words "Let it rain," you know, and he just Rain Man. He's just a goofball of a dude. Yeah. He's fat, he's hideous, but he knocks it out of the park.
And that role has been made to look so easy over time. Is the role of the friend in a romantic comedy where because it's just the bumbling doofus who's just giving advice. You don't really care about that guy's storyline, and to be able to have a great actor like that actually commit to a role, it just proves how hard that role actually is. Some people make it look easy. Some people make it look really, really hard, and when it's bad, it takes the whole movie down.
Well, speaking of bumbling doofuses, I want to have JTI and Copser come in here to.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you to the Wild Man and the producer of the show. Move Your Own TV. Pit Boss. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Josh. And again, check out Wild Man every Tuesday, youtube.com/schmozno for Wild Man TV. Okay,
so we're going to each give the interns 5 seconds to describe Philip.
What I want to do here, JTI, while we're sitting here, take the pad.
Just kidding. Look at that Eli Manning-like arm.
Yeah, and we have a pen. And then, JTI, while we're talking to you two, I want you to come up with a Schmo's choice of Philip Seymour Hoffman movies.
By the way, with that news arriving on Sunday morning like it did, I had an interesting Saturday night. I was still processing what happened Saturday night. Yeah. I get that news, then I'm like, well, at least there's going to be an all-time great Super Bowl on. Ugh. And it was maybe all the players were bummed out because that Super, at least all of Denver was bummed out because that Super Bowl was just atrocious.
Yeah.
Great halftime special. Great halftime special. Super Bowl, not so much.
Yeah. You know, before we get into the movies with you guys, because I wanted to ask Mark as well, too, because one of the things, too, you know, we shouldn't just completely go away from the fact that the addiction part of it we mentioned in the beginning. Now, he... because they found him with a needle, I think, in his arm from what the rumors
were. The reports are that there was a needle still in his arm, and he was in the bathroom, and there was like 50 to 70 bags of heroin and other power goods and all this stuff.
Is that a guy who was checking out?
Why are you asking me about the addiction thing?
You had four beers on the way up.
Drew $1,200 in cash or something from an ATM, and it's like that's the level of addiction where, again, that's what I brought up at the top of the show. It's like you think of like heroin addicts, you think of just like the scum of the earth, just like asshole hoodlums who just had nothing to live for and they never came from good families. And it's not that way at all. It's like it happens to good human beings. It's a disease just like cancer and AIDS are and monkeypox. It's just like that. And it can affect anybody, including one of the best actors that ever lived.
And it's crazy because I think, and again, I don't know all the facts, and I'm speculating like everyone else, but that he was clean for like 20 some odd years.
He was in AA. He was in the program for a long time.
And then he just went off. I wonder what it was. It said, I mean, whatever it was, because you take out that kind of money, And with that many bags, you're looking to check out that night.
It's I mean, again, you can't get inside the guy's head, and I don't want to get too far into the speculations of what actually happened, but there is that thing that all artists kind of have where you have that tortured side, and you kind of become a little more manic depressive when entertainment is your passion, when you just give and give for others' pleasure, and what are you receiving in return, then you can kind of be a little high sometimes, and you get really low, and when you're really low, how do you get out of that? And sometimes people go to really, really bad decisions to do it.
It's terrible. It really is terrible, but again, it's sad that we lost him so young, but we are here tonight. We're talking about a lot of his movies. We're all
mainly Along Came Polly, but he was in some.
That's right.
Stuff.
Well, if you guys know us and you know our crew, you know that we are huge movie fans, and we were definitely every one of us tweeted out and we talked about how the loss has really been. It sucks for all movie fans out there. It sucks for human beings, to be honest with you, when you lose somebody like this. But we're talking about all his great movies, and we have both JTI and Copster here talking about some of their favorite movies. Copster, you're a Mission Impossible guy, right?
Yeah, I almost, when we, JT and I did Schmo Plus, and it was between Mission Impossible 3 and 4, and I totally forgot that Philip Seymour Hoffman was in the movie. And he stole the show in the movie, because if you look at all those movies, he's really the only villain that actually stands out. I mean, John Voight's pretty great in that one, but Philip Seymour Hoffman carries the villain role pretty well in the third movie.
Yeah, and I remember I was actually at a Super Bowl party when I saw the first trailer for Mission Impossible 3, and they showed Tom Cruise looking all pissed off, and before that they showed Philip Seymour Hoffman just telling him what he's going to do to his love of his life. I'm going to kill her and I'm going to cut her and all this stuff. And just seeing the fact that by that time Philip Seymour Hoffman was that acclaimed actor, that this guy is going to be in Mission Impossible 3, then that adds legitimacy to the movie, and it's not the other way around. It's not him trying to get a role. It's that guy is making this movie more credible.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. And then
Copster also wanted to bring up Twister.
I love Twister.
See, but you would say
I don't mind that. It's a cheesy movie.
Yeah,
it really is.
It's not great.
No, it's not. But it's just, I know I grew up with it too, so maybe it's a little nostalgia. Yeah. I love Michael Crichton too.
I didn't want to ask how old you were when you saw it because I'm going to cry. But JTI, so what?
Who would you rather take in Twister, Helen Hunt or Jamie Gertz? Sorry, we got to do this.
Hunt.
You go,
Twister?
Yeah. Helen Hunt, who is the and then Jamie Gertz is also the kind of bitchy wife. But if Jamie Gertz is my wife, she can bitch me all she wants.
I don't know. Like, I don't like the curly hair. I might go Hunt on that one.
I'm Jamie Gertz because I know what she's capable of. I've seen Lost Boys enough times. JTI, what do you? So before we get into Schmo's choice, what do you got for movies? Philip Seymour Hoffman, anything in particular?
First thing I want to say, like, P.T. Anderson is one of the guys I kind of found. This actor.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people bring
him up. Not found him, but established him.
Established him.
Yeah.
Kind of found him in a way because everyone talks about Boogie Nights, Magnolia.
Son of a woman.
P.T. Anderson's first film was Heartache. Philip Baker Hall, Samuel L. Jackson, John C. Reilly, Gwyneth Paltrow. Great film that put him on the charts. That's how he got Magnolia, all these other films. And there's a scene in this film that it kind of comes out of nowhere. And it's Philip Baker Hall's at a casino.
Philip Baker Hall?
Philip Baker Hall, yeah. Okay. He was also Magnolia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Michael Thomas from Miami Vice?
Okay.
And basically he sits down there and he's at a casino. And it's like a random scene. He's playing, I think he's playing crabs or dice. And there's a whole scene.
Philip Baker Hall has crabs?
No.
This is the Philip Seymour Hoffman podcast.
He's basically playing
crabs.
Craps.
Did I say craps?
Did I say
craps again?
He got the crabs from some hooker.
It's the crab people from South Park.
He's with Guillermo del Toro and John Liejo.
There's the sea animal, and then there's the euphemism for poo. The euphemism for poo is the gambling.
Usually, what happens when I try to make a good point, I usually embarrass myself.
Yeah.
You know, you saw the poor bastard. He's like walking on eggshells. All right, this is the word. All right, this is okay. Wait, I got it. The. Okay, that's
what
happens out there
when
now.
You spend your life coloring in Denny's menus. You know.
All right. So
anyway,
so films.
Basically, Heartache is a great film. There's a great scene.
Finish your point. Finish your point. I know he's playing craps and.
Yeah.
I'm going back to coloring my book here.
Oh, JT, right. Poor son of a bitch.
Man, we shouldn't have taken that exit, Dad. Let's get back on the highway.
Well, we went from Riley's hair to JTI's crabs. Alright, so let's move on here too. Let's get some more.
It was a hell of an effort, JTI.
I tried.
Is he gonna do Schmo Choice?
I want to take a couple more questions from the fans here, and then we'll do like 2 or 3 minutes from the fans, and then we'll close it out with Schmo's Choice, because JTI, for as bad as he is with pronunciations, he's great at Schmo's Choice, which is a great game that he's kind of come up with. It's
I was in Vegas playing Whack Yak the other night. I was playing creme de brulette, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. This is a quote. Michael Coleman has the quote. That's because we're uncool, and while women will always be a problem for us, most of the great art in the world is about that very same problem. Good-looking people don't have any spine. Their art never lasts. They get the girls, but we're smarter.
Damn right. You hear that, Macuga? Go suck an egg. You good-looking sexual energy.
Do your silly dance in the corner. Okay, so then let's get some more from the fans. A lot of cool stuff here coming out. We're talking about a lot of Mission Impossible 3. Go ahead and comment right now. What was your favorite role of Philip Seymour Hoffman? Why did you like that particular role?
It's an all-time tough one, too. Because Capote, I think, is maybe his opus, because he won the statue for it. But I would take Almost Famous.
Now, what about Doubt? Did you ever see Doubt? JTI, what did you think? No. Doubt's the one where he was the priest that was accused.
He's the priest.
So what did you think about Doubt? About his performance in that.
Yeah, the performance is great. I wasn't a huge fan of the film.
Yeah.
You know, like, honestly, when you guys talk about, like, films that may not be the best, but he probably gave a great performance, I thought he killed it in The Master.
Well, yeah, but real quick, though, I want to go back to Doubt, though, too, because the thing with Doubt was that he went back and forth with Meryl Streep.
Yes.
To go, because that, again, like you talk about a heavyweight title fight between Meryl Streep and Philip Seymour Hoffman. That's what that guy can do. That's what he could do.
That's exactly what I said when I saw the trailer for Doubt. I never actually saw the movie. I haven't seen it yet. But now I want to go back and watch some of these other ones that he was in. But when you see the trailer for Doubt and it's Streep versus Hoffman, it may as well be, you know, Holyfield versus Lewis.
You know, he blows most people out of the water. When he's in a scene, he's the one you gravitate to. So for him to go up against somebody that like the A caliber, and it really showed out, it kind of made him shine even more.
Yeah. Another one he was good in, too, we'll say what you will about the movie, was Red Dragon. He was pretty creepy in that movie.
All right, let's stick on JTI here for a second, and then we're going to do Schmo's Choice. We do it the same way we did last time. We'll have maybe Macuga and will you stay there? Cops will stay over there, and we'll have and Riley can scream out with his hair about what he likes, and then Ken can also scream out. All right, here we go. So we got Schmo's Choice.
We'll start with where he plays two villains.
Okay,
Punch Drunk Love. He played the villain Adam Sandler in Mission Impossible 3. It's Tom Cruise.
Okay, let's go. Let's do Cobster, then Macuga, then Riley, then Knapsack, then me, then Harlock. Okay, everybody got it. Good.
All right.
Mission Impossible. Yeah. Impossible.
You're keeping Mission Impossible.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep Mission Impossible. Okay.
I'm keeping Punch Drunk Love.
Macuga's keeping Punch Drunk Love.
Punch Drunk Love.
Riley's keeping Punch Drunk Love. Ken.
Punch Drunk Love.
I will go Mission Impossible 3.
And I will give the win to Punch Drunk Love.
All right.
Punch Drunk Love stays on the board.
I agree. Punch Drunk Love, I'd give that one, too.
Okay.
Here's two films that we just talked about. Both great performances and films that I felt a little bit so-so on. The Master, where he's going against Joaquin, or Doubt, when he's going up against Meryl Streep.
Okay, now Macuga goes first, then it goes around the cycle like that.
Okay.
It's like volleyball. There's a rotation.
Stick your face in
there. I'm going to keep... that's a weird angle on my face. I'm gonna keep The Master.
Okay. Copster.
Oh. The Master.
Okay, now we're out of order.
Riley.
Now the show's chaos.
Riley.
Officially off the rails.
The Master.
Ken.
What are my choices?
The Master or Doubt?
Master.
Sorry, guys. Ken has a big paper tomorrow.
It looks like The Master. The Master?
Yeah, the Master.
All right, how about you give us a good one?
I'd give you two Paul Thomas Anderson films, Boogie Nights or Magnolia.
Ooh.
Now we're talking.
That's tough. Okay.
Macuga says keep Boogie Nights.
Macuga keeps Boogie Nights?
You gotta go Boogie Nights. Of course. You gotta.
That's becoming your Gary Busey.
Oh, please, God. I don't want to get to that level.
Yeah. Riley.
Boogie Nights.
Wow.
Ellis?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a clean sweep for Boogie Nights.
Ken.
Respect the cock. Keep Magnolia.
I will keep Boogie Nights.
Okay. I would go Magnolia on that. I think he gave a better performance. Although he is great at Boogie Nights.
All right. So how many more we got?
I got like two more.
All right, two more.
At least. Savages, which is a great film, like Kuka said. And Devil Knows You're Dead.
Ooh. Yeah.
Very strong performances.
All right.
I'm going to keep Savages. I liked that.
Never seen him.
Okay. Yeah. Good for you.
Thanks for being honest. Riley?
Devil Knows You're Dead.
All right.
Kenny?
I've never seen them, but based on JTI's sexual maneuver, I'm going to go with the Devil movie.
I'm going to have to go with Savages.
2-2. Christian is the tiebreaker.
I'll tell you, this is actually the toughest one because of the creepy. What's her face? Marissa Tomei is sexy in the movie. Mm. But if you're looking for performances on Philip Seymour Hoffman, I'm going to keep Savages.
You know what? I forgot that was the one that Marissa Tomei gets naked in.
I know, but she gets naked in everything these days. Yeah. So
she really does. That was the turning point for Marissa Tomei. When she got naked with Philip Seymour Hoffman, she's like, I guess I'm just showing my tits in every movie.
Yeah, this is a wrestler. I'll give you one more.
Last one.
These are two great supporting performances. Almost Famous for Cam Crow, or Charlie Wilson's War, which was actually nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
Oh, huh.
Yeah,
I think that's a sweep around
the board. Charlie Wilson's War is adorable.
Yeah, I think it's a sweep around the board. So it's got to be Almost Famous. Everyone's Almost Famous. Charlie Wilson's War, he was great, but come on, that's Almost Famous.
Well, what's the better film or the better performance?
But you're going to ask.
The answer's Almost Famous.
All right,
Shmo's choice. All right, guys, so that was the show. That was the tribute to the late Philip Seymour Hoffman. It really sucks that this is how we have to be talking about all these movies.
Yeah, but you know, on the lighter note, coming out in theaters this weekend is a movie you can actually enjoy for the first time this year, as far as Chris and I are concerned, for the most part, that everybody's really going to love, and that's the Lego Movie.
Everything is awesome.
It is. That movie really is. Now it gets a little long. It takes some turns towards the end, but if you're a child, it's for childs of all ages. Children.
Yeah. And again, go check that out. I would avoid Monuments Men at all costs. But again, you can check out our reviews.
Bring a pillow if you go.
On this very channel right here. Go check out some of those reviews. Follow us on Twitter, on Facebook. And make sure that you get all your movie news from schmozno.com. I'm telling you, Mark Riley every day is posting Copsters on there. We have trailer guys. We have special articles. It really is a new... You're going to find all your content there. It's a lot of fun. Very easy to navigate. And we want you guys to interact. We're going to start the Schmoville section there. Someone asked about the Schmozno Network. What's going on with that? We are going to be having some announcements about it. It's coming. It's coming.
You know, guys,
worth the wait.
When you watch an '80s movie, they do the montage and they make a podcast studio in 2 minutes with some sort of sweeping robot. We don't have that technology here yet, but we're getting it very soon. And I've just been handed a $20 bill, which means I have to plug the new Christian Harloff podcast, Far Away. It's a Star Wars show that I'm not involved in. Good luck with that.
Thank you. I actually didn't ask you to plug that at all because I forgot.
I'm keeping the money.
Yeah, check it out, by the way. And I am actually listening. I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks. People have been asking me since we talked, did our tribute on the characters we wanted to see and spend all
days.
I've been getting a lot of people asking what books they should start with the Old Republic. Absolutely Darth Bane, and I just finished the Darth Plagueis book. It's incredible.
I had to hear, every time we hang out, I have to hear about this fucking Darth Plagueis book. Like, where he is in it, and like
so
how it's going to end.
So good.
But good news, though. My Jabba the Hutt movie, Jesse Eisenberg, has been cast as Jabba the Hutt.
Again, if you want to check out that podcast, Tiffany Smith and I do it on geeknation.com, and just go to the Far, Far Away. Check out Josh McCougar's show every Tuesday on our channel. Check out JTI. He's going to be doing more Schmo's Choice stuff. Mark Riley again. Ken Knapsack, at Ken Knapsack. The whole crew. Peace out, Mother Fs.
And I'll be at the Improv. Thanks.
Dude up. Dude. Up.